Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today we have an update on that lawsuit filed by Alpine parents and taxpayers against the Grossmont Union High School District over the district's failure to use bond funds approved to build a high school in Alpine. Countywide, early voting has begun, and we'll have information for you today on how you can avoid those long lines at the polls by casting your ballots before Election Day. On the presidential campaign trail, we'll have the latest primary results, as well as the outcome from several polls showing which Democratic candidate would have the strongest chance to beat Donald Trump in the general election, and the answer may surprise you. Alpine is getting a new county library, and we'll have the details about next week's grand opening celebration, and you're invited. On our Chaldean Corner segment of today's show, we'll tell you about two local charities that held a fundraiser in El Cajon recently to help Christian refugees fleeing ISIS in Iraq. And you may be inspired to learn how much money they raised to help fellow Chaldeans living in refugee camps. From Public News Service, we have an important story today on a proposed U.S. Department of Agriculture rule that could make it harder for recipients of SNAPs, or food stamps, to buy food in some communities that are known as food deserts. On Green Scene, we'll tell you about a global effort to urge governments to break free from fossil fuels, including the Los Angeles protest coming up this weekend that's attracting some San Diego participants. Then on Crime Beat, we'll tell you about a case of road rage that escalated into elder abuse in East County. Now, if you're a voter in the city of San Diego, we'll have information for you today about a Meet the Candidates forum with city attorney candidates that KNSJ Radio will be co-hosting this weekend along with the League of Women Voters. Find out how to attend, how to submit questions in advance, or listen live. On Vines and Wines, we have a tribute today to a giant in the East County winemaking industry, Herman Salerno, owner of Salerno Winery, who passed away this week. Then on sports, Liz Alper will have some upbeat news about a major league contract involving a San Diego State alumni baseball star. If you live in the Grossmont Cuyamaca Community College District, listen up for news about a candidate who's withdrawn from the race, but whose name still appears on the ballot. We'll tell you which alternatives the major political parties are supporting instead. The County of San Diego is starting up larvicide drops on waterways across our county to prevent mosquito-borne illness, and we'll have details on today's show. On People Power, hear an inspiring story today about a 91-year-old mom who staged a protest on Mother's Day to save a cherished tree in her Allied Gardens community. Today we'll be re-airing our newsmaker interview with Stephanie Ortega from Promises to Keep, an organization helping local foster youths achieve their dreams. We'll also have details about a cattle rustling caper in Lakeside that involved a high school prank with those mischief-making vaqueros at El Capitan High School. And then we'll have some important news about laundry pod poisonings that are occurring at an alarming rate, as well as information about a recall of infant pacifiers sold at major retail outlets. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, where East County matters. This is Miriam Raftery with an education report. A preliminary ruling has been issued in the lawsuit over an Alpine high school. Superior Court Judge Joel Pressman's decision would set aside a preliminary injunction against the Grossmont District and allow Grossmont to keep $42 million that had been set aside for an Alpine high school that the district never built. The money is part of Proposition U bond money approved by voters in part for the long-promised school. The suit was filed by the Alpine Union School District and Alpine Taxpayers for Bond Accountability. The plaintiffs have announced that they will file an appeal. The Alpine Taxpayers for Bond Accountability voiced disappointment in the verdict. The group's attorney, Craig Sherman, stated, "The actions and conduct of Grossmont indicates it just does not care about the rather clear voter mandate for Alpine." Judge Pressman's preliminary ruling follows a 9-day trial that included extensive testimony. Plaintiffs contend that the district spent money on items not in the bond and on projects that were lesser priority than the new high school. Alpine students have died in the past commuting to schools up to 37 miles away, round trip, on roads that can be icy during winter weather. The district, however, has claimed enrollment triggers required by the bonds were not met. Plaintiffs dispute that contention, since the enrollment trigger threshold number for students was met not once, but three times through the years. But Judge Pressman said only the start of construction counts toward that threshold. The district bought land, but never started construction, and then withdrew its architectural design review application from the state. Judge Pressman's decision parses the language in Prop U, which states that funds, quote, may be spent, unquote, on building an Alpine High School, which he interpreted to mean the project was authorized but not required. However, arguments for the bond measure to parents in the district touted building the high school as a reason to vote for it. Grossmont Superintendent Ralph Swenson issued a statement calling the decision a win for the students, teachers, and the taxpayers of East County, adding, "Our governing board can now resume their efforts to see that the taxpayers' dollars are put back to work for the benefits of our schools and the students that we serve. All students at all schools in our district should have classrooms and facilities that meet the current educational needs of those students and that ensure their safety." He didn't explain, however, how the safety or needs of the Alpine students would be met if the district still refuses to build the school. Board member Priscilla Schreiber, who has dissented from the Grossmont board majority and been a consistent voice supporting the Alpine school and opposing funding a lawsuit to oppose it, had this to say. "Grossmont wins on all counts? Are you kidding me?" A petition is pending before the state that would allow Alpine to leave the Grossmont district entirely and become part of the Alpine Union School District, which currently serves only elementary and middle school children. The County Board of Education has recommended approval of that unification petition, which would allow the Alpine District to expand and serve high school students. Thus, the Alpine District could build the high school. But even if unification is approved by the state and ultimately by voters, it would be a hollow victory if Judge Pressman's ruling stands and is not overturned on appeal. The right to build a high school, without the $42 million or more needed to do so, would still leave Alpine students forced to commute long distances to school for the foreseeable future.
If you want to cast your ballot early for the June 7th presidential primary election, you can now do so at the County Registrar Voters Office, which is located at 5600 Overland Avenue in Kearny Mesa. Early voting began Monday and will continue every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. and on Election Day up until the polls close at 8 p.m. The office will also be open the weekend before the election for early voting from the same hours, 8 to 5, on Saturday, June 4th and Sunday the 5th. Approximately 900,000 mail ballots were sent out through the post office Monday and began arriving in voters' mailboxes this week. Registrar of Voters Michael Vu urges voters to return mail-in ballots as soon as possible. He says, quote, "If you know how you want to vote, grab that mail ballot when you get it, vote it, and send it back in right away. The sooner we get the ballot back, the sooner we can start processing it so it will be counted right when the polls close at 8 p.m. on June 7th. If you're not yet sure how you want to vote, you can also drop off your mail-in ballot at any polling place on Election Day. Mail ballots are convenient for voters who'd rather not make a special trip to the Registrar of Voters office to cast their ballots or wait for the polls to open on Election Day. Registered voters can still request a mail ballot until May 31st. In the meantime, the Registrar is still looking for poll workers, especially bilingual poll workers. For more information, you can call 858-565-5800 or visit sdvote.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders soundly defeated former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton on Tuesday in the West Virginia Democratic primary, a state that Clinton won handily against Barack Obama back in 2008. Sanders breezed to a win with over 51% of the vote, while Clinton got just 36%. Clinton has been treated by media and party insiders as the presumptive Democratic Party winner throughout the primary season, despite losing to Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders in most states to date. The problem for Democrats is that increasingly, polls show Sanders more likely than Clinton to defeat presumptive Republican nominee Donald Trump. A new poll just released by CNN shows Clinton losing to Trump in battleground states, 39% to 37%, whereas Sanders would win handily, with 52% and Trump scoring just 30%, according to the poll. Six other recent national polls show Sanders trouncing Trump by margins ranging from 14 to 24 points, Real Clear Politics reports. By contrast, when voters were asked about a matchup between Clinton and Trump, one poll found Clinton losing to Trump, while five others showed her winning by slim single-digit margins, some within the margin for error. Only two showed wins in low double digits. Adding insult to injury, a public policy poll just released shows voters surveyed said that Trump is less popular than root canal surgery, lice, used car salesman, or the DMV. Other polls have shown high unfavorability ratings for both Clinton and Trump among voters. While many view Clinton as having more depth of experience, more view Sanders as honest and trustworthy. Sanders draws strong support from independent and declined to state party voters, who now make up roughly a third of the entire electorate, and a constituency that both parties must woo to win the White House. Sanders drew an overflow crowd of 21,000 people this week in Sacramento, California, which has the most delegates of any state in the union and could prove to be a kingmaker or a queenmaker in the Democratic primary. Clinton leads Sanders in pledged delegates with 1,704 to Sanders' 1,421. A total of 2,382 delegates are needed to win the Democratic nomination. However, there are also 712 superdelegates, and so far, 523 of those have said they support Clinton, and only 39 say they support Sanders. That could change, however, if Sanders surpasses Clinton by the convention date or comes close, and poll numbers continue to show Sanders more likely to beat Trump, since in theory, superdelegates can shift their allegiances if they choose. Meanwhile, Trump, with no Republican opponents left in the race, won two Republican primary contests hands down this week. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're invited to the grand opening of the new Alpine Library, a branch of the county library system. The opening ceremony for the $10.7 million library will be held on Saturday, May 21st at 10 a.m. at 1725 Alpine Boulevard next to the Alpine Community Center. The new state-of-the-art library will be the county's first zero-net energy building, which means the facility will meet high standards for energy efficiency. The Society of American Registered Architects California Council awarded Alpine Library the Design Award of Honor in recognition of superior achievement and professional design excellence during its design phase. The facility was designed by architect Philip Pape and built by C.W. Driver. The new library is more than four times the size of the current facility and features separate areas for children, tweens, and teenagers. The approximate 13,500 square foot facility includes study rooms, computer stations, a family homework center, an outdoor patio overlooking the nearby park, and a reading area complete with a fireplace. The ceremony will feature musical performances by Adrian Nims and Spiritwood, the Alpine Chorale, Joan McQueen Middle School Band, and the Alternative featuring Rick Favale and Mark Harkey. There will also be face painting, balloons by Free Spirit the Clown, henna tattoos and exhibits. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
Coming up next, the Chaldean Corner on East County Magazine's radio show, bringing you news for and about our region's Iraqi Chaldean community. Thousands of Iraqi Christians are among the refugees driven from their homes, now scattered and homeless throughout the Middle East, facing an uncertain future. Last week, a benefit event to help these refugees persecuted by ISIS was held in El Cajon, raising over $250,000. The event was held at St. Peter's Cathedral Church Hall, hosted by the nonprofits Hope for Iraqi Christians and the Knights of Columbus Mar Thoma Council. Over 500 people came to the event, where the guest speakers included Father Douglas Bazzi, a Chaldean Catholic priest from Arbil, Iraq, who was kidnapped and tortured by ISIS. Johnny Moore, a human rights activist and author of the book Defying ISIS, also spoke. The two speakers gave riveting firsthand accounts of their experiences at the hands of fanatical extremists and persecution of Christians in the area that was the birthplace of Christianity, once known as Mesopotamia. Kamal Asawaf, president of the Knights of Columbus group, says that 100% of the funds raised will be sent to provide basic necessities for refugee families living in camps, including medicine, food, blankets, and clothing. El Cajon is home to over 40,000 Chaldeans and other Iraqi Christians, making the community one of the world's largest concentrations of Chaldeans. Dr. Nuri Barka, a local Chaldean community leader, stated, "People of all faiths and ethnicities have united for this common cause, and we are so grateful to the generosity of everyone's contributions." For more information on how you can help these persecuted refugees, you can visit hopeforiraqichristians.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the network for social justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Your local convenience store may no longer accept cards for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program if a new rule proposed by the U.S. Department of Agriculture goes into effect. The rule says if 15% or more of a store's profits come from hot foods, the store will not be allowed to accept SNAP's electronic benefit transfer cards. Jawad Ersani, who owns five convenience stores in Los Angeles, says 80 to 90% of 7-Elevens would be affected, and that could be a major problem for the millions of Americans who live in a so-called food desert, where the nearest grocery store is more than a mile away.
Our stores are placed in communities where these people rely on us to feed them. We're talking about not only economically challenged, but physically challenged people.
SNAP is intended to be used to buy basics, such as milk and eggs, and is not supposed to be used for fast food. Ersani says the rule came in reaction to a pizza chain that was letting people use EBT cards to buy frozen pizza and then heating it up on site. In March and April, Ersani and a group of 7-Eleven owners traveled to Washington, D.C. to ask members of Congress to write the USDA and oppose the rule. Dennis Lane, who has owned his store in Quincy, Massachusetts for 40 years, also made the trip.
The kids that were catching the school bus in front of my store in the 70s are coming in with their own kids now, and I've been feeding two generations of families in this neighborhood, and I want to be allowed to continue to feed the families in my neighborhood.
The public comment period on the USDA rule is open until next Wednesday on the website regulations.gov. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. This Saturday, many San Diegans will be heading to Los Angeles along with thousands of other Californians to participate in a mass rally in downtown L.A. called Break Free from Fossil Fuels. It will be one of several mass mobilizations around the globe this month calling for an end to fossil fuel extraction. These rallies will be advocating to keep coal, oil, and gas in the ground, an end to environmental racism, and a transition to 100% renewable energy. The wave of global break-free mass mobilizations kicked off last week when hundreds of people shut down Britain's largest open-cast coal mine and 10,000 people marched in the Philippines for a rapid transition to renewable energy. In Los Angeles, rally participants will be calling for keeping California oil in the ground. California is currently the third largest oil-producing state in the nation. Participants will demand an end to drilling next door to homes, schools, and businesses in Los Angeles and the Central Valley, and investigations to prevent fossil fuel disasters like the massive gas leak at Aliso Canyon that forced thousands of people to evacuate their homes for months. Speakers at the rally will include Bill McKibben, founder of 350.org, a climate action organization based in San Diego, and philanthropist Tom Steyer. They're up against some heavy hitters. Last year, oil companies spent $22 million trying to influence legislation in Sacramento, our state capital. That included efforts to undermine groundbreaking legislation to reduce oil-generated pollution in California, the American Lung Association reports. Fossil fuel companies have also fought efforts to ban fracking and combat climate change. And most recently, the oil industry is bankrolling opposition candidates running against legislators with strong pro-environmental records in California.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Ed Barreno with a Crime Beat report. A 31-year-old La Mesa man has been arrested and charged with elder abuse of his 78-year-old neighbor. The incident prompted a standoff with sheriff's deputies at the family's home on Altamira Drive near Mount Helix for several hours Monday night. Sheriff's deputies responded to a report of an altercation at the home in the unincorporated portion of La Mesa. A neighbor called 911 to report the suspect was driving erratically and later approached him aggressively. The suspect, Aaron Spaulding, threatened deputies with a pot of boiling water and a knife, KNSD reported. The disruption forced deputies to shut down the street, preventing some neighbors from coming home and requiring others to shelter in place inside their residences until the suspect voluntarily surrendered around 7:40 p.m. The victim suffered minor injuries.
Who is the best attorney to represent the city of San Diego? KNSJ Radio and the League of Women Voters will host a Meet the Candidates forum for city attorney candidates Gil Cabrera, Rafael Castellanos, Mara Elliott, Robert Hickey, and Brian Pease. The forum, which will be broadcast and streamed live by KNSJ, will be held this Saturday, May 14th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Thomas Jefferson School of Law. A dinner will also be available at 6 o'clock sharp for a small donation. You can submit questions at the forum or ahead of time for the candidates by emailing info@knsj.org. You can listen to the forum on KNSJ at 89.1 FM, stream it online at knsj.org, or hear it on your smartphone using the TuneIn free application. Welcome to Vines and Wines on the East County Magazine Show, bringing you news to savor about our region's fast-growing winemaking industry. This is Miriam Raftery with some sad news for our local winemaking industry. Herman Salerno, the founder of Salerno Winery in Ramona and a pioneer in our region's winemaking industry, has passed away at age 81. Linda McWilliams, president of the San Diego County Vintners Association, remembered Salerno as a pillar of the early winery community in San Diego County and Ramona. He was an award-winning winemaker and helped and encouraged so many. She added, a visit to his winery was not just about tasting the wine, but a view into the entire culture of art, food, old-world conversation, but also the joy of his operatic voice. Born in southern Italy in the Reggio di Calabria region and raised in Argentina, Salerno was a talented opera singer who performed with opera companies in Argentina, Spain, Venezuela, and in the United States at the Academy of Music in Philadelphia and the Connecticut Opera. He later opened a bakery in Kearny Mesa that he sold to San Francisco Sourdough Company in 1985. A love of wine soon led him to his ultimate career. He became a winemaking consultant at the Bernardo Winery before purchasing land in Ramona with his wife, Rose, in 1995. Within just a few years, he was winning medals in winemaking competitions coast to coast, including international contests. In 2014, Herman Salerno received the Trailblazer Award presented by vineyard consultant and Manis Vineyards owner Greg Manis, who was also a protege of Salerno. Manis said the Salernos dreamed together of establishing a world-class winery. They inspire all of us to persevere, laugh, enjoy life, and appreciate life's pleasurable and fleeting moments, he said. The Salerno Winery in Ramona featured not only wine, but an outdoor pizza oven where Salerno used his master baking skills and occasionally even thrilled guests by singing opera, also bringing in other opera singers to entertain his visitors. In addition, he started an impressive sculpture garden with 90 works from the collection of Jaime Calhoun, who later became a co-proprietor of Salerno Winery, assuring that Salerno's devotion to music, wine, and culture will continue for future generations of visitors in Ramona.
This is Liz Alper with a sports report for East County Magazine on KNSJ. On Monday, San Diego State graduate and starting pitcher Stephen Strasburg signed a 7-year, $175 million contract extension with the Washington Nationals, according to MLB Network's John Heyman. The deal includes an opt-out option after the third or fourth year, Fox Sports' Ken Rosenthal reports. Bonuses are also included for hitting 180 innings pitched each season. Strasburg was drafted in 2009 first overall by the Nationals out of SDSU. He made his debut in 2010, but was forced to undergo Tommy John surgery. He returned to the mound in September of 2011. His first fully healthy season in 2012 was the first time the Nationals reached the playoffs in their history. The Nationals were formerly the Montreal Expos. Without the deal, Strasburg would have become a free agent in the winter. Since 2012, Strasburg has had the 8th most strikeouts in the MLB and the 4th highest ratio of strikeouts per 9 innings.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update on the race in the Grossmont-Cuyamaca Community College District Board. Incumbent Mary Kay Rosinski has announced that she will not seek re-election to the board. Her announcement came after the ballots were printed, though, so her name will still be on it. Her withdrawal leaves two candidates vying for what is now an open seat for Trustee Area 4. Elena Dams, a community college educator, has been endorsed by the County Democratic Party, as Rosinski had been in the past, although the seat is considered nonpartisan. Timothy Carruthers, a governing board member in the Alpine Union School District, the other candidate in the race, has been endorsed by the County Republican Party.
Temperatures are rising, and West Nile virus season is approaching, so the County of San Diego is starting its annual aerial drops of mosquito-fighting larvicide on local waterways. A helicopter drops the granule larvicide on 48 waterways around the county once a month from May through October to combat West Nile virus by keeping mosquito populations down. The larvicide is a naturally occurring bacteria that won't affect people or pets, according to the county, but it does kill mosquito larvae before they can grow into adult mosquitoes that can transmit West Nile virus and other diseases. The rivers, lakes, ponds, and wetlands the county treats stretch from lakeside to oceanside and from Chula Vista to Fallbrook, totaling over 1,000 acres. The county's vector control program also regularly treats around 1,400 potential mosquito breeding grounds by hand, plus collecting and testing dead birds to monitor the disease, giving out free mosquito-eating fish, as well as tracking down and treating neglected swimming pools. County officials are asking the public to police their own backyards and dump out standing water to keep mosquitoes from breeding. The mosquito species that are native to San Diego County and can transmit West Nile virus don't need a lot of water in which to lay eggs and can breed in people's backyards, but the call for public help has taken on added importance because of the appearance of two invasive Aedes mosquito species in the last 2 years. So far, only small numbers of the yellow fever mosquito and Asian tiger mosquito have been found here. The diseases that they are best known for being able to transmit, dengue fever, chikungunya, yellow fever, and the Zika virus, do not naturally occur here. But these two mosquito species love to live near people, not just in people's backyards, but also inside their homes, and can breed in a thimble full of water. The Aedes species are different from San Diego County's native mosquitoes in appearance and behavior. They're smaller in size, have distinctive black and white markings, are aggressive biters, and, unlike our native mosquitoes that prefer to feed between dusk and dawn, the Aedes mosquitoes bite during daylight hours. County officials urge the public to follow the county's Prevent, Protect, Report guidelines. Prevent. Prevent mosquito breeding sites. Every week, dump out and clean containers that hold water inside and outside homes, from equipment to toys, flower pots, old tires, or anything that can collect water. Fill plant saucers with sand or fine gravel so water won't form pools where mosquitoes can breed. Protect. Protect yourself from mosquito bites. Wear long sleeves and pants when outdoors. Use insect repellent, preferably one containing DEET. Make sure the screens on your windows and doors are in good condition, do not have holes or tears, and are secured to keep insects out. Report. Report if you are being bitten by mosquitoes during daylight hours or if you find mosquitoes that match the description of the yellow fever mosquito or Asian tiger mosquito by contacting the Vector Control Program at 858-694-2888 or you can email vector@sdcounty.ca.gov. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
This is Janice Russell, host of People Power, profiling people and organizations making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting People Power on the East County Magazine show today. A 91-year-old activist's Mother's Day action has saved a tree, at least for now, that has stood in her Allied Gardens neighborhood for nearly 60 years. Marie Ostwald issued a Mother's Day plea on Facebook asking San Diego Mayor Kevin Faulkner to stop city workers from cutting down a tree that her husband planted back in 1957. She included photos of herself beneath the tree's expansive shade, holding up protest signs urging Mayor Faulkner to protect her tree. She also invited other mothers to come sit with her on Monday to help save the beloved tree. Mrs. Ostwald wrote, "As a mother, I nursed it and I helped it to grow from a seedling to sprout. As the years went by, our family grew, and so did she. All the neighborhood kids grew up playing within her shade. Today, she's a San Diego landmark at the corner of Greenbrier and Mission Gorge. She's a beautiful, majestic, living thing that has grown old alongside me. My husband died in 2005, but I still remember the day we planted the tree," she reflected. The city was slated to remove the tree this week because it cracked a sidewalk. City workers cut some roots and repaved the walkway, but indicated the roots could cause future damage and that the tree was no longer properly anchored, according to Ostwald's post. But the 91-year-old activist hired a private certified arborist who, Ostwald says, found that it is possible the tree can stay for years to come. She adds, "It's all I have left of my late husband," and she asks that the tree remain as long as she is alive. Her post has drawn over 1,600 shares so far on Facebook. Upon learning of the plight of Mrs. Ostwald and her tree, City Council candidate Justin DeCesar called Mrs. Ostwald on Mother's Day to offer his support. He immediately posted a petition gathering signatures to take to the city. As mothers and babies began arriving Monday morning to show support, She received word from the city that it has granted her tree a temporary retrieve. The city will have a second arborist review the tree's stability to determine if there is any risk of it falling or if it can safely be left standing. Mayor Faulkner sent the spry senior activist this note. Mrs. Ostwald, I want you to know that we heard you. Happy Mother's Day.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes a madrigal concert, a butterfly festival, a blues fest, Wild in the Country, a Laurel and Hardy Wacky West film night, and more.
Plus, we'll have previews of coming attractions, including the Ramona Rodeo, Santee Street Fair, theater performances, a Flag Day parade, and America on Main Street.
So stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more. The San Diego Madrigal Singers will perform Love in Springtime, a concert at the Croc Center Theater Rotunda on Friday, May 13th at 7 p.m. Is love something worth dying for or just an afternoon delight? Find out what Renaissance composers thought about love and lovers and how centuries haven't changed man's attitude towards the most basic human expression. For more information or tickets, you can visit sdmadrigalsingers.org.
Lamplighters Community Theater in La Mesa presents Neil Simon's popular comedy drama, Chapter 2, about a recent widower encouraged by his younger brother to start dating again. It's a bumpy road to dreamland. The production takes stage opening Friday, May 13th, and running until Sunday, June 12th. For tickets, full show schedule, and details, you can visit lamplighterslamesa.com.
You're invited to a party to benefit the Alpine Community Center on Friday, May 13th from 6 to 10 p.m. This event includes a ribeye steak dinner, art show, live jazz, blues, and swing music by Chet and the Committee, hosted by the Alpine Community Center and co-sponsored by the Alpine Mountain Empire Chamber of Commerce. For tickets, you can call 619-445-7330.
The Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College in El Cajon invites the public to its third annual Butterfly Festival on Saturday, May 14th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. The event marks the start of butterfly season, including the exhibit of up to a dozen native butterfly species that will be on display through July 31st. The festival on May 14th highlights the important role these insects play in our ecosystem, as well as how visitors can attract and support butterflies in their home gardens using drought-tolerant plants. A large selection of native milkweed plants will be on sale. Festival activities will include tours of the Butterfly Pavilion, Butterfly Discovery Lab, workshops, live music, food, crafts, and jewelry by local artisans. Children are encouraged to dress as a caterpillar or their favorite winged pollinator for a pollinator party at 11:30 a.m. For details, visit thegarden.org.
The Kumba Hot Springs Blues Festival on May 14th from 1 to 8 p.m. will feature blues, brews, and barbecue. You can also enjoy live music by talented musicians from across our region, plus vendors, kids' activities, and an art council raffle. This event in downtown Hakumba is hosted by the Hakumba Arts Council and Hakumba Hot Springs Spa and Resort.
The Magnolia Science Academy and Grossmont College will be co-hosting the San Diego STEAM, that's Science, Technology, Engineering, Art, and Math Expo, on Saturday, May 14th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Grossmont College. The event will feature bottle rockets building and launching with the Chemistry Department from Grossmont College, hands-on science and robotics demonstrations with students from Magnolia Science Academy, theater and band performances by MSA students, an interactive experiment with math, science, art and history displays, and more.
Young Actors Theater in Spring Valley continues its presentation of Once Upon a Mattress that runs through May 14th. This musical production is based on the Hans Christian Andersen classic tale, The Princess and the Pea. For tickets and details, you can visit yatsandiego.org.
Lions, Tigers, and Bears invites you to Wild in the Country, a benefit event to support the Exotic Animal Rescue Facility in Alpine. The event will take place on May 14th from 3 until 7 p.m. and will feature a catered dinner, cocktails, an optional Feed a Wild One experience, visit with big cats and bears, plus a silent auction with prizes including an African safari. For more information or tickets, you can visit lionstigersandbears.org.
The San Diego Laurel and Hardy Group, Saps at Sea Tent, will present Laurel and Hardy Wacky Western Night on Saturday, May 14th at Trinity Church in Spring Valley. The doors open at 6:30 with showtime at 7 p.m. The program includes such cinematic gems as a car-punching cartoon, West of Hot Dog, The Last Chance Saloon, Horse Collars, and Way Out West. You can also savor barbecue beans and cornbread during intermission. For more information, you can visit sapsatsea.com. Now, for a preview of coming attractions.
The Ramona Rodeo takes place May 19th through 22nd, along with other activities, including a parade down Main Street on the 21st and dancing to the country band Patrick Howard Trampas on the 20th and 21st after the rodeo. There's also a slack rodeo performance on the 19th, as well as a kids' day on the 22nd, featuring the youngest cowboys and cowgirls riding sheep in a mutton-busting competition. Adult rodeo events include bull riding, bareback riding, barrel racing, and tie-down competition, steer wrestling, and more. Winners may advance to the Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association National Rodeo Championships. For tickets and details, you can visit RamonaRodeo.net.
The City of El Cajon invites you to bring the family to its fun patriotic event, America on Main Street. This year's event has the theme The Beach Comes East and will be held on Saturday, May 21st from noon to 8 p.m., coinciding with National Armed Forces Day. Festivities include three stages with live entertainment, a Ferris wheel, food booths, a chili cook-off featuring police versus firefighters, arts and crafts, and a petting zoo. For details, you can go to AmericaOnMainStreet.org.
You're invited to celebrate Older Americans Month with singing, dancing, and comedy by the Rhinestone Grannies. They will be giving a lively and hilarious performance at the El Cajon Library in downtown El Cajon on Sunday, May 22nd at 2 p.m.
Lake Jennings will hold its long-awaited catfish opener on Friday, May 27th. The lake will open at 4 p.m. instead of the usual 6 a.m., and it will close at midnight. 2,000 pounds of catfish will be stocked for this special event. You're invited to come drop a line and try to catch a whopper. A full-size lantern is required for each party after 8 p.m., and boats are first come, first serve. For more information, you can visit lakejennings.org.
Croc Kids Junior Theater presents Peter Pan Jr. on May 27th and 28th at 7 p.m., plus a 2 p.m. matinee on May 29th. Peter Pan Jr. is a modern version of the timeless tale about a boy who wouldn't grow up with no flying required. The score includes new arrangements of classic Disney songs and a story featuring one rousing adventure after another. Wendy Darling loves to tell stories to her brothers, Michael and John, but when her father announces she must move out of the nursery, Peter Pan comes to visit the children and whisk them away to Neverland. Their journey introduces them to the Lost Boys, mermaids, Indians, and even the infamous pirate Captain Hook. It's Peter to the rescue when Wendy is taken captive by the dreaded captain, who has his own sinister plans in mind for our hero. For tickets and more information, check sdcroccenter.org. Croc is spelled K-R-O-C, and click the calendar section.
The Santee Street Fair at Craft Brew Festival draws over 30,000 visitors each year with patriotic fun for the whole family. The 8th annual festival will be on Saturday, May 28th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Riverview Parkway and Town Center Parkway in Santee. This festival will feature local breweries and honor the military on the Heroes stage. Festival highlights include a craft beer festival, live music and entertainment, a crafter row and artist alley, over 300 food and vendor booths, carnival rides, and games for the family. For details or tickets, you can visit SanteeStreetFair.com.
The Mission Trails Regional Park Foundation welcomes acclaimed musician Gregory Page performing his one-man show on Sunday, May 29, 2016 from 3 until 4 p.m. at Mission Trails Regional Park's Visitor Center in San Diego. you're invited to rewind to a bygone era with an afternoon of enduring, enchanting, and entertaining music by Gregory Page, a London-born croonador. That's a crooner plus troubadour and recording artist. The Gregory Page songbook has been featured in film, on television, the BBC, and NPR's Prairie Home Companion. He is an international touring artist and has performed his one-man show in Europe to critical and popular acclaim. For more information, visit mtrp.org.
The California Old Time Fiddlers Association invites you to the Julian Fiddlin' Pickin' Contest on Saturday and Sunday, June 4th and 5th, plus a Saturday night performance by two-time National Fiddle Champions. There's also a warm-up workshop on Friday, June 3rd, led by a National Grand Fiddle Champion. Whether you're a fiddler, picker, or just a spectator, there's plenty of fun in Julian with jamming throughout town during the contest weekend. If you play, you're encouraged to bring yourself and your instrument and be prepared to smile all day and all night long. For a full schedule and details, you can visit sandiegofiddler.org.
The city of La Mesa shows its patriotic spirit with the La Mesa Flag Day Parade on Saturday, June 4th. This annual community-supported event is held along La Mesa Boulevard through the downtown village. This year's theme is Salute to Old Glory, and the Grand March will be Cabrillo National Park in honor of the National Park Service's 100th anniversary. Pre-parade concerts start at 9 a.m. featuring local middle school bands. The parade rolls out at 10 a.m. Afterwards, a community ice cream social will be held at La Mesa Boulevard and 4th Street. For more information, you can visit the City of La Mesa's website at cityoflamesa.com.
The La Mesa Chamber of Commerce will host its 8th annual Taste of La Mesa on Monday, June 6th from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the La Mesa Community Center. You're invited to bring your appetite and sample fare from many local restaurants as well as other food providers. Early bird rates are in effect through May 31st, and for tickets or reservations, you can visit lamesachamber.com.
Christian Youth Theater will present the 9th annual San Diego Follies Time Warp on June 16th through June 19th on the Helix Main Stage Theater at Helix High School in La Mesa. The musical review's spectacle features dazzling costumes, scenery, and lighting. This year's Time Warp show will feature hilarious skits, musical numbers, flashy dancing, and a live band. For tickets, visit cytsandiego.org.
The City of La Mesa's Family Fun Outdoor Concerts at 6 series will be held once again in Harry Griffin Park this year behind Grossmont High School each Sunday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. The series opens on June 12th and runs through July 24th. For the season opener, the San Diego Concert Band will be performing. Other musical entertainment through the season will include Rhythm and the Method, Jazz West, Sonic Epidemic, Silver Mine, and the Big Band Ambassadors.
Movies and More by the Lake presents Lights, Camera, Beagle, the Peanuts movie on Friday, June 24th from 6 p.m. to approximately 9:30 p.m. at Santee Lakes. The cast of Young Actors Theater will perform songs from the movie, plus check out Lucy's psychiatric booth and batting practice on an inflatable batting cage. There will also be food, games, and plenty of fun. For more information, you can visit santeelakes.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions here in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Tasha Matthews on East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio. And today we have a special guest, Mrs. Stephanie Ortega. Stephanie Ortega, Vice President of Operations, has been with Promises to Kids, an organization dedicated to helping foster youth, for 10 years, and has followed many of the organization's Guardian Scholar students throughout their educational experiences. Mrs. Ortega earned her bachelor's degree in law and society with a minor in Spanish at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and completed her master's degree in forensic psychology at Argosy University in Washington, D.C. Stephanie manages Promises to Kids programming, including the entire Guardian Scholars program. She works with the scholarship committee, recruits and manages mentors, and fundraises for the program. Please welcome Stephanie Ortega. Hi, Stephanie. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so the first question I have for you is, can you explain how Promises to Kids was founded?
Sure. Promises to Kids was founded in 1981, originally known as the Child Abuse Prevention Foundation. And in those times, child abuse was kind of taboo, wasn't really spoken about. There was a hotline for abused animals, but nothing for children. And that was when our founders realized that this was a really important necessity and needed to create this nonprofit. It originally started with one of our founders, Norma Hirsch. She tells a wonderful story that you can find on our website about an abused child and needing to run out and get Polaroid cameras for all the policemen so they could take photos so that they could bring it to court to make sure that that child was protected.
Well,
yeah. And today our mission is to create a brighter future for foster children. And we have four core programs, one being the Polinsky Children's Center, which is San Diego County's emergency shelter for abused and neglected children. We also have Camp Connect, which brings siblings who are separated in the foster care system back together once per month, the day activities, in addition to a four-day summer camp. We also have Guardian Scholars, which you spoke about, which is a continuum of services to support current and former foster youth who have the goal of pursuing higher education from ninth grade. We serve students from ninth grade all the way through their higher education goal. And finally, we have a program called Foster Funds, which supports the unmet needs of current foster youth with the things every child should be afforded, such as prom dresses, music lessons, those something special things.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm curious to know what got you involved in Promises to Kids.
Sure. So like you said, I've been with Promises to Kids for 10 years. I learned about the position shortly after returning to San Diego from graduate school. I have a unique situation in that I started living on my own at 15. And thankfully, I had an older sister who kind of paved the way for me, just followed in her footsteps. That's how I graduated high school and ended up in college. But when I learned about this position, it just felt kind of right up my alley. It supporting other students who needed that support to get through high school and into college, which was exactly what I needed when I was going through it. And I thought, what a perfect fit. I'd love to share my story and help in any way I can.
Okay, cool. So that kind of relates to your passion and why you're passionate about what you do. That's awesome. All right. What are some statistics about foster youth transitioning out of foster care or out of high school? And what are Promises to Kids statistics on helping to remedy the situation?
Great question. Unfortunately, the statistics nationally for foster youth, they're not that great. About 50% of foster youth graduate high school. Of those, about 70% say they want to go to college, but only about 10% are making it there, and less than 3% are completing their higher education goal. Promises to Kids is really proud of their Guardian Scholars program. We have an over 80% success rate. Our students are graduating from high school and enrolling in higher education and then completing their higher education goals.
Okay, cool. What is the most memorable experience working at Promises to Kids?
That's a good one. There's so many. Since I have been there for 10 years, I've gotten to know so many students and been there at so many different pivotal times in their lives. I do think for me personally, graduations every year is the most memorable. I think I still just get chills when you hear a student's name and see them walk across the stage. Yeah. It's such an important time. It's a great accomplishment. And it's just really fun to be there and kind of share in that experience.
Yeah, that makes sense. What in your position requires a lot of hard work to sustain Promises to Kids, and how do you handle that work so that you are able to effectively get those things done?
That's a hard one. I think because I started working with Guardian Scholars and the students in that program, and that's really one of my passions, students in the program are the priority. Anything that they need, I want to make sure that myself or somebody in the office is available to support them. We assign mentors and any kind of wraparound services that are necessary to meet the needs. But at the end of the day, if a student calls me and they have a need, they're in a crisis, there's an emergency, I want to be sure that I can help them. With that said, I also have a 3-year-old daughter, you know, and just trying to balance the needs of work and home. Important having that work-life balance, but it's easier when you love your job and you love the people you interact with.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like even as a student, I'm always constantly finding myself like balancing the things that I love to do, which is like, you know, I love school. I love being here. So it's like balancing, finding that fine balance between like those things.
And it's definitely practice and it's good. There's good and bad days to it. Yeah. But it works. It comes together.
Yeah. Where do you see promises to kids 10 years from now?
So I can only hope that we are 100% meeting the needs of the foster youth that we serve. So I hope that if there are still siblings who are separated in foster care, that we can bring every single one of them together monthly, if not more frequent, to keep that bond going. For Guardian Scholars, unfortunately, we still have to turn students who apply to the program away. For every two students that apply, we have to turn one away. And I want to get to the point where we never have to do that, that every single student who wants to pursue higher education can participate in our program.
Yeah. How is Promises to Kids different from any other foster youth nonprofit organization?
I think Promises to Kids, because of it being founded in 1981, having such a long history, we've really been a community change maker. And we're most well known for raising the money to build the Polinsky Children's Center and also supporting in the capital campaign to build San Pasquale Academy. Again, Polinsky Children's Center is San Diego's emergency shelter for abused and neglected children. It was built in the 90s, and before that, there really was an inadequate placement for kids who were removed from their home. They were all crammed in one room. If one child got sick, all the kids got sick. It just really wasn't healthy for those kids. Polinsky is night and day, so much better. It's a 10-acre campus. They have everything they need right there, schooling, medical help, psychological help, a pool, a gym, everything you can think of is right there. And San Pasquale Academy is a residential high school for foster kids, and it just allows them to complete their high school education with the support to successfully do that.
Wow, it sounds like so many things have improved in the past, and Promises to Kids has been a huge help in that. It's awesome.
Yeah, and finally, we were the first to bring Guardian Scholars down to San Diego. Yeah. So really supporting and continuing that mission to support kids from birth all the way through to adulthood.
Yeah, and just to segue into foster care in general, are there ways in which foster care has improved since the founding of Promises to Kids?
Well, I think, like I alluded to, every year we get a little bit better. So I think my best examples are the Polinsky Children's Center. Yeah. So it's so much better than what was in place before Polinsky was built in the 90s. You can hopefully keep siblings together. You can provide the interventions that are necessary. Promises to Kids still funds 5 programs that occur at Polinsky. Mm-hmm. We have developmental screening and enhancement programs, so the interventions necessary from the 0 to 5 age range to help those foster kids get back on track at the same level of other peers. We also have the preschool, health and wellness, pet therapy, and a youth-to-youth program. So that's where former foster youth come back and peer mentor the kids that are now in the foster care system living at Polinsky Children's Center.
Okay. And then what can listeners do to help Promises to Kids?
Well, we love any support that we can get. I would encourage listeners to visit our website at www.promises2kids.org. And that's promises plural, the number 2, and kids plural .org. Right there on that website, you can find a link to donate. We'd also love to have any volunteers. And there's an additional link to sign up for one of our volunteer orientations.
Cool. Any upcoming events listeners should know about?
Yeah, we actually have an annual summer concert gala, and it is the beginning of June, so it's coming right up.
How
we
fun.
Find a wonderful performer that comes every year. We're not yet sure who that is, but it will be listed on our website, so definitely check back there. It's a great event at a beautiful estate in La Jolla. We have over 600 people that attend, and it's just a wonderful night, so we'd love to have anybody there.
All right. And are there any last-minute thoughts that you would like the viewers to know?
I think you covered it, but thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here, Stephanie. Once again, this is Tasha Matthews on East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show, bringing you a tale of a most unusual cattle wrestling episode and roundup in Lakeside. A popular icon in downtown Lakeside, a life-sized bull statue atop the former Pinnacle Peak Steakhouse on Main Avenue, vanished last week, leaving locals to ponder, where is the beef? Fortunately, the missing steer statue was found a few days later, standing on the roof of El Capitan High School, and that's no bull. The high school's football team, after all, is named Vaqueros. That's Spanish for cowboys. No one has come forward to fess up to steering the statue to the high school, though a senior prank is rumored. In fact, the lonely bull has gone missing before. Former Pinnacle Peak manager Tony Petroro told our editor back when the steakhouse was at its former location in Santee. Petroro said the wayward bull was actually stolen several times, usually as student pranks, but it always found its way back home. This time around, Lakeside resident and photographer Billy Ortiz took the bull by the horns, after seeing its picture posted on Facebook at the school, and wrangled the life-size steer statue dubbed Fred into his pickup truck. He hauled Fred back to his now rightful owner, Rick Childs, proprietor of the building that housed the now-closed Pinnacle Peak Steakhouse. Though Ortiz did pause first for a photo opportunity in front of a cattle drive mural painted on a lakeside building, with Fred the Bull appearing to gaze longingly out at the herd thundering past while standing in Ortiz's truck. Milking this story for all it's worth, we'd be remiss not to tell you about a second fiberglass cow named Betsy, located just across the street from the old Pinnacle Peak Steakhouse at the Lakeside Historical Society's headquarters. The two had been gazing at each other across Main Avenue for 2 years, Ortiz quipped on his Facebook page while the bull was missing. But now that it's been returned, he surmises, Lakeside is grateful Fred is back home.
According to a new study in the journal Pediatrics, 17,230 children under the age of 6 have been accidentally poisoned by ingesting laundry detergent pods. In a one-year period from 2013 to 2014, in all, 769 children were hospitalized, 30 went into a coma, and 2 died. The latest victim is a 7-month-old baby boy in Florida. Ingesting any form of laundry detergent, powder or liquid, would be poisonous. However, the pods have a chemical composition and concentration that is even more toxic. The pods are cheerfully colored and look like candy or toys. They're even scented. The pods have become popular since they were introduced by Procter & Gamble in 2012 for convenience and portion control. Parents of young children may wish to switch to conventional laundry detergents. If you do use laundry pods, they should be treated like all hazardous household products and kept out of reach if there are children living in or visiting the home. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Miriam Raftery with an important safety alert for parents of young children. Pacifiers made by Munchkin Inc., a California-based company, have been recalled because clips can detach, posing choking hazards to babies. 10 cases have been reported, although no injuries occurred, thankfully. The Munchkin pacifiers were sold nationwide, including at major retail stores such as Target, Walmart, Babies R Us, and online through Amazon.com. The Consumer Product Safety Commission urges parents and caregivers to take the pacifiers away from the babies. Munchkin will send you a replacement package with 2 pacifiers or give you a full refund. For more information, you can visit munchkin.com. That's munchkin.com. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, and Pond 5. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.